Ooh, you want to play psycho killer? Can I be the helpless victim?
Cross your eyes and scream, man. Scream for your life!
Welcome. I'm your scream queen, Jenica Olin. This is my 17th episode, and we're officially in March. So that means spring break, St. Patrick's Day, Texas Independence Day. Didn't realize that was a thing until I looked up the holidays in America for this month. Apparently, that one just passed on March 2nd, and it marks the adoption of the Texas Declaration of Independence, which someone explained it to me because Texas is not independent from the rest of America. Please explain it to me. There's also International Women's Day. Unless we just threw out that holiday with the rest of our rights. I'm going to focus on spring break horror movies this month with a theme that I've titled Spring Break Slaughter. Lots of young people trying to get it on, but forces beyond our control have different plans. If you're new here, each episode will have an intro, brief synopsis of the movie, an analysis of the film, and then I get into the true crime of it all. I'm a huge true crime fan, and I like to make connections between the true horrors that inspire our darkest imaginations. The truth is, the stuff on screen is way tamer than the true horrors that take place every day. Spoiler alert, I've made it my job to spoil the shit out of this movie. So if you haven't seen the movie I'm covering today, which is 2001 Maniacs, also the title of this episode, yeah, that's it. That's the movie I'm covering. If you didn't notice that already. So if you want to go watch this, you can watch it on Tubi. That's the only place I could find it where I didn't have to pay Amazon to let me watch whatever I want to watch. This movie was made in 2005, directed by Tim Sullivan and written by Chris Coben and Tim Sullivan, starring Robert Englund, who we love, of course, our Freddy Krueger, Lynn Shay, and Giuseppe Andrews. I said that with a question mark because I'm really not sure if I said Giuseppe right, but I think I did. Some quick trivia about this film. It's a remake of or a sequel to 2000 Maniacs that was made in 1964. I haven't seen that film. Maybe I put it on my list, but we'll see. I'll get to it eventually. I think this one kind of filled my bucket for Confederacy horror films that are also during spring break. So we got a lot of stuff going on here. Producer Eli Roth has a cameo in this. He plays the same character he played in his own feature directional debut, Cabin Fever, in 2002. If you're a heartier horror buff who likes your flicks to follow with the triple B rule, babes, boobs, and blood, then yeehaw, bubba. Y'all just struck gold. Oh my God, that's the most Southern I think I've ever fucking sounded. I am born and raised in Florida. This film is a slasher horror comedy. You are not supposed to take it seriously, but the commentary on racism in Deep South is something I appreciate as a Floridian, and I will definitely be touching on when it comes to the true horrors behind this ridiculous film. The film cost $1.5 million. I couldn't find any information on how much it made, but I have to imagine they lost a bit of money on this one. Let's set the scene with a synopsis of the movie.
To Pleasant Valley.
Anderson Lee, nice to meet you, sir. My two partners here go by.
Lee Anderson, Lee. my, what a beautiful surname. Y'all ain't from the South now, are you?
Born and raised, sir. Lived in South Carolina till freshman year.
Then you crossed over to the side, I see. Well, we might just save you yet. You see, y'all arrived just in time to be our honored guests at the Guts and Glory Jubilee!
Dude, that's a lot of dodge.
Six prep college students and a biker couple travel south towards Daytona Beach for spring break. But a detour leads them into the seemingly idyllic Georgia town of Pleasantville Valley, which is holding its annual Guts and Glory Jubilee in honor of the American Civil War. While they stay in town, completely isolated from the outside world, they are systematically separated and killed in gory fashion by the town's residents. They are greeted by Mayor George W. Buckman, a charismatic but unsettling figure, along with the town's overly hospitable and eccentric residents. The students are invited to stay for the town's annual Guts and Glory Jubilee.
If I supply the peaches, do you think you boys could supply the cream?
We're staying at least for 5 minutes.
An old-fashioned Southern festival celebrating Southern pride. While the group initially enjoys the hospitality, it becomes clear that something sinister lurks beneath the town's charm. After engaging in a brief romantic encounter with the town stud Harper, Kat is blindfolded and tied up. When he takes the blindfold off her eyes, it's revealed that she is attached to four horses. The townsfolk whip the horses, sending them galloping in opposite directions. Kate is violently pulled apart limb by limb. That night, one of the guys gets his stomach pumped full of acid. The next day, the group of visitors realize something strange and their friends have been going missing. The townsfolk distract them with games and by teaching them about their traditions. If the students try to leave, they are met with hostility, so they go along with the activities.
I would not besmirch the sincerity and efforts of our proud little town here if I were you, sir. A great price has been paid to ensure the success of this festival.
Whoa, excuse me, sir. We're just a little hungover, you know? Hair of the dog?
As the ladies learn a dance, Lee is crushed by the town's bell. Malcolm is crushed by a metal press contraption. And Ricky is skewered with a spear. Ricky on a sticky.
See y'all barbecue this?
What?
Got the skewering rod raring to go!
Well, are we ready? Are we ready? One, two, three! Ram and feed!
Anderson and Joey are captured and tied up, but somehow they are able to escape. Upon alerting the authorities about how their friends have been massacred, they learn that Pleasant Valley is nothing but a cemetery, a memorial for 2001 Confederate villagers who were massacred 140 years earlier by renegade Union troops during the Civil War. A plaque reveals that the town's residents will not rest until the crime has been paid back. 2001 villagers were killed. 2001 Northerners must be killed. An eye for an eye. As the two students drive away on their motorcycle, they are decapitated by barbed wire. The heads are picked up by Hucklebilly, who walks down the road and fades away. So today I have Mikey as my guest from Slashers Podcast, and we are going to be talking about 2001 Maniacs.
Yeah,
Yes. Hello, everybody. Mike here from Slashers Podcast.
So what are you working on currently?
So right now, besides Slashers Podcast, which as many of your listeners know, if they've listened to their past couple episodes, we have Lance and Aid from Slashers Podcast that have come on to your show as well. Save the best for last, I assume. The only really thing I have going on is currently I'm working on another podcast. I'm still doing Slashers, but Slashers is the home for horror movie reviews. And I've always wanted to do a podcast about like cryptids and local legends and things like that. So it's actually kind of funny. If you follow like threads, you know, Instagram has like, they try to do their Twitter. Mm-hmm. And I kind of dabble in it because it is actually like a really cool environment. People are really nice and like, you know, there's not a lot of like negativity. And mm-hmm. you know, I go to the gym a lot, and so I got a random post from somebody that said I'm working on making the gym my only personality trait in 2025, and I take nothing seriously, not even myself. So I just responded, I was like, oh haha, me too, let's go. And mm-hmm. oh no, I said me too, we should be friends. So realized this guy actually lived like 30 minutes away from me. And we started DMing, and then I realized he had a podcast, and I was like, oh, so do I. And so I posted a couple of days ago, like a side by side of that thread and then a picture of us at a bookstore. And it's like, spoiler alert, we actually became friends. And he's the guy that I'm doing my podcast with. So it's That's called. Awesome. Yeah, it's called Graveyard Guys Podcast. It hasn't released yet, but if you want to follow us on Instagram, it's Graveyard Guys Pod. And we're releasing updates because we're trying to do a video type show, not so much just a audio. So it does take time to like set everything up, but it's really annoying. But yeah, Graveyard Guys Pod or Slashers Pod for Slashers Podcast. And I write. And I try to filmmake. Acting is like my big thing. There's a short coming out with me and my really good friend Jenna. If you've watched Terrifier, she's our final girl that was not. And yeah, I met her on set when I was doing a project. We became really good friends, and she made this little short film, asked me to be in it, and it was great. And we'll be premiering that this year sometime, so I'm excited to go see that. That's it. That's called Spray Bottle, by the way, if you want to look up that film, but it's not been released yet.
Okay. That's interesting. Spray Bottle. So I have like some of the themes of the movie 2001 Maniacs, like broken down. And we kind of had a talk about this a little bit, you know, maybe in another life or yeah. something. There was a previous discussion, and I feel like someone said that you went to Blockbuster, and am I just having a premonition? Are we just like that connected?
I mean, our chakras are aligned because early 2000s, when, you know, I'm a hot high school slut at Blockbuster every Tuesday, renting what I rent, getting all the new horror movies that get released every Tuesday, because I'm the only nerd that knows that movies get released on Tuesdays in my little neighborhood. And I found this one and I watched it, and I really loved it. You know, there's a lot of subtext that I didn't catch that I caught this time because of everything we've been going on politically. And when I was a kid, I didn't really pay attention to it. You know, I live in Texas. I'm from Texas. The film is about the Confederacy, basically a Confederate town that was taken over, and the residents are still bitter. So they do like a little festival every year to like celebrate whatever they were celebrating.
Yeah. And, getting revenge.
Yeah.
Celebrating revenge.
Yeah. And you throw in some cannibalism, and you know, one of my favorite films is Eli Roth's Cabin Fever. Mm-hmm. And when I saw the film, so first, like, to preface, I'm gay, everybody. Surprise. I have a big crush on me. Well, I had a big crush on Eli Roth. He's not so, he's a little problematic now. But back then, I didn't know any better. And, mm-hmm. You know.
We all like, make mistakes.
Yeah. And, you know, like the singer from Korn with the big spikes, and, like the dark black mm-hmm. hair and the big beard. Like that was like my thing, yeah. as you can tell from what you see today. And Eli Roth is in Cabin Fever and he looks like that. His character's name is Grim and he has a dog named Dr. Mambo. And, you know, I thought his part in Cabin Fever was really funny. That was the first time I actually saw Eli Roth and I realized, oh, he's actually kind of hot. And then I'm watching 2001 Maniacs, which came out 2 years after, I believe, and Eli Roth is a producer. And Eli Roth shows up as Grim with Dr. Mambo. And turns out that this takes place in the same universe as Cabin Fever, before Cabin Fever, because there's some lines that Eli Roth says in Cabin Fever that stem from what the guys in this movie told him. And mm-hmm. I was just like, I love the way it connected. And, you know, the film is about a Confederate town and they bring in, you know, people that the Confederate see does not like. We have a Black person, we have a Chinese person, we have a, not gay, but like a bisexual person, because
yeah,
he has girlfriends, but he's also attracted to men.
Yeah.
And
there's like a throuple going on.
Yeah. Which, you know, super progressive in 2002, I think we said it came out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So because I didn't even catch it. I was like, you know what I thought it was, me and my stupid little teenage self? I thought he was a porn filmmaker and those were his actresses and that's why they were all being like sexy together. And I was like, oh, he's just making porn. But the big thing that stuck out to me is that this was the first horror movie I saw that had a character, whether he's gay or bi or whatever, have, granted, it's not explicit, we don't need it to be, but he has sex with another man, just like everybody else goes up and has sex with someone else. Like,
yeah,
you know, it's inclusive, as funny as it is to say about this movie. Yeah.
I really appreciated the diversity, oddly enough, in this movie and the fact that it's so open about different relationships. Like there's this throuple, they don't make it weird. I really see it as a highlight on the whole Confederacy and just like the culture that surrounds the South and the attitude of the South. As someone who is born in, like, raised in Florida, Florida is a mixed bag. There's a lot of different stuff going on in here, but there is a lot of Confederate, like, very racist South backwards ass towns in Florida too. Most of Florida is that. And so I always, like, the Confederate flag has always bothered me just because I'm half Puerto Rican. I was raised in a Hispanic household. And one thing I didn't realize with the Civil War is how many people were killed in the Civil War. I mean, the Civil War was extremely brutal. It was family members killing each other, neighbors killing each other. But I don't know how many from each side died. I only know the total number. I know that they lost.
Well,
but
a lot of people don't. So, and you know, it's funny because, you know, there's recently discourse on the internet about, is horror inherently political? And it's like, yeah, like, as silly and campy as this movie is, it's heavily political. Yeah. Like, this is almost like a trauma level, like, silly. There's boobs, there's really good gore, like, mindless violence. You can watch it, like, when I was a teenager and not really think anything of it, but it's extremely political. And it is, the story is backed off of a real event. And it's, you know, the good thing about it is when I was a kid, I didn't really know much about what the Confederate flag stood for. I just knew it was on the car of, you know, the Dukes of Hazzard. That's an old 70s show if you guys are under 20.
Yeah.
Or a movie with Jessica Simpson and Johnny Knoxville. Mm-hmm. But it was just pop culture in the South. And it wasn't until I was an adult that I was like, that was saying, hey, I'm from the South and I want to fight to keep racism. Why are you flying? Oh, and by the way, you lost. Like, I even give my own, I'm from San Antonio, Texas, everybody. And what are we famous for? The Alamo. Well, guess what? We lost that too.
when it comes to living in the South too, just my experience with the Confederate flag was always very racist. The person who I saw with the Confederate flag, like, I grew up in Tampa and we had like Plant City right next to us. So it's like city next to, you know, farmland and people, like, we all kind of mixed and mingled. But the people that had those flags were always the rednecks. And they were always very overtly racist. And I just never felt comfortable, even if, like, I'm extremely white passing and most, like, people don't even consider me Hispanic. But whether or not you did consider me Hispanic, I still grew, I had a fully Hispanic mother who was Puerto Rican. And I, you know, that's my whole family. And so I always felt very uncomfortable around people with those flags. And they would say, like, racist shit just blatantly, too. And they would pass it off as jokes. And then they would say, like, oh, I'm not racist because I have this one Black friend, or I have this one Black person that I talk to. And it's always like, even as like a kid, I'd call them out and be like, that doesn't mean anything. You're dumb. But in the movie, there's one Black character in the town, and he is like the butcher. And I just saw him as representing like the whole, my own experience of like the one person that will say, well, I'm not racist because I have this one Black friend.
Yeah. I don't know what they were trying to say with that, because it's an obvious choice to have someone in the town be Black. And, you know, when I was in, I've always loved history. And so that was like, I was like a huge like slacker, didn't pay attention, did what I had to get 70s. But for some reason, I always paid attention in history. And there are, you know, cases where even when slavery was made illegal, that a lot of slaves didn't really know what to do. And so some of them just stayed, you know, with their plantation owners. I don't know what they're called. Slave owners. There you go.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if it was something like that, or if it was like, you know, better to be on the right hand of the devil than in his way type situation. They didn't really dive into it too much, but also like he was there working. He wasn't like there enjoying the party, you know?
No, he was definitely their hand. Whenever it came to slavery being abolished, and what, the next day you're supposed to just go off and, you know, have your freedom. They don't have houses. They don't have money. They don't have anything. Like, what are they supposed to do? It has to be like a, you know, a gradual progression of helping people. And we never helped them. Newsflash, we never helped the slaves. And so if you're wondering why we have systemic racism and we have an unfair system, well, this is it right here. This is where it originated. And those Black people who were now free, they were free to be poor and die in the streets.
Yeah.
So pretty fucked up. But
not to bring down the podcast or anything, but so this movie is really funny.
I mean, the 2001 number is supposed to be that there were 2001, Confederate, like, Southern people in that town. And it's supposed to be like, so some Union soldiers came in, and they were apparently in the storyline, they were not authorized to go in, but they came in and they slaughtered this entire town that had 2001 people in it, which seems like an extremely high number for like some podunk town in the middle of Georgia. Like, they probably, realistically, these towns had like 200 people population.
Yeah, that would make, I was like, I did not see 2000 people in that town.
No.
But, and for some reason, all the women had fake breasts, but.
Yeah, I didn't realize there was so much silicone, and
back
they had
the Civil War.
Yeah, they had. It's a very funny movie. There's a lot of exploitation in there as well. Like, oh, are you gonna like, cause being like a cousin fucker is in there. Yeah.
And the sheep fucker.
Yeah, there's the demented kid who keeps killing all the animals.
Yeah, which, by the way, was that his real voice?
I think it might have been.
I was like, how old is this kid? Because he sounds like a five-year-old, I don't know. But the cast was really great, and I think what makes this movie even better is that the cast were great actors. You know, mm-hmm. sometimes you get movies like this and you're like, oh, she struggled through that line.
Yeah. But no,
like, they all did really good. You have Lynn Shay and Robert Englund. Of course, they're going to mm-hmm. do fine. But
yeah.
even like the frat guys, they were funny mm-hmm. and they took it seriously. There's no like, because the movie is campy and funny, and mm-hmm. you reading the script, I'm pretty sure you know that this is not serious, but they take it seriously. Mm-hmm. There's no like, because I hate when they deliver a line, there's kind of like a subtle like, you get it? And they don't yeah. do that. You know, it's delivered as if they're making a serious movie, and mm-hmm. it's not, which makes it work really well.
Yeah. Did find it interesting when they first get into the village, it looks like a ghost town. And then mm-hmm. all of a sudden, all these people rush out. And if I'm just going to give a lot of spoilers here, you know, if you haven't seen it, you should probably go watch it, but there's going to be spoilers. They're almost like ghost-like, how they all come out of nowhere, and then you find out later on that they are ghosts. So that kind of made sense.
Yeah. Which is like, they don't really take advantage of how creepy that could be.
Mm-hmm.
But that concept is actually pretty creepy.
It is really creepy, but I think they wanted, that was like the twist, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't want us to know that they were actually in a ghost town, that this wasn't, you know, this was actually a graveyard and all this stuff. So I think they did a really good job with that. And yeah. I just like all the townspeople were very creepy. Like all the kids were so creepy.
Yeah,
their costuming was great, except that one girl, Peaches, who's like, she's sucking on a lollipop with a bra on. It's like, where the fuck did you come from?
She hasn't done anything else. I've made sure of that. I looked and I was like, what else has this girl tried to be in? I know I was praising the cast or everybody, but she's the one mm-hmm. that's like, ugh.
What I was getting to is like Anderson Lee is... he's kind of like our final guy, but not really. He's kind of the hero, but he's got, you know, that famous last name Lee.
Mm-hmm.
And so like Robert E. Lee, which I'm sure we all know, if you know, you've taken any American history classes, you know who Robert E. Lee is. One thing that I found interesting, I started looking into him more. Because I was curious, like, is he really just like a big racist asshole? Why are people kind of he isn't seen in a negative light with both Republicans and Democrats, and in a lot of ways, especially if you're a politician. I mean, if you're just a left-leaning person, then you probably don't like him, and I don't like him, and I didn't want to like him at all. Like, I didn't want him to be even a little bit decent, but he has some admirable qualities, I will say. He is the one who, like, he went down in defeat. He said, all right, we're not going to do this anymore. So he's the one who kind of, like, you know, waved his white flag, and everyone was upset at him in the Confederacy. But he also advocated for peace between the Union and the Confederacy. Like, if it wasn't for a lot of what he was trying to do to bridge that gap, there would have been a lot more bloodshed. So newsflash for those who love Robert E. Lee and Confederacy and all this stuff, he actually gave up the Confederate flag when they lost. Yeah. And he saw it as a symbol of failure. And even when he died later on, he refused, like, he did not want anyone to have that flag at his funeral. So one respectable thing about this man is that he bowed out. He realized he was wrong, and he didn't continue with a false narrative. He did what he needed to kind of reconcile with everything that had happened. So.
Well, you know what's fucked up about that?
What?
I was sitting on this fact the whole time you were talking about growing up with the Confederate, whatever. Mm-hmm. So I grew up down the street from Robert E. Lee High School. And my family went there, and their flag was the Confederate flag. So could you imagine Robert Lee being like, I said not to use that fucking flag. And they recently changed the name, and it caused all this controversy. So instead of being Robert E. Lee High School, now it's called like Leadership Excellence and something. Okay. And the first thing they did was they stopped using the Confederate flag.
Mm-hmm.
But I was like older when this was changing. Like, this wasn't like, oh, oops, we just did it. No, this, my mom went there in high school, and this wasn't until I was an adult that they made these changes.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they were called the Rebels and stuff. And like, my mom was a rebel rouser because she's on the dance team. And it's like, guys, you guys are so silly.
Yeah. Cosplaying like racist culture.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, please don't. Please don't.
I remember what I was going to say earlier.
Yeah.
There was a lot of unique deaths. Did you have a favorite one?
Yes. There are so many good deaths in here. I think I probably have a tie between the press, like when he does like the metal press that comes mm-hmm. down, and the skewer.
Yeah. Let's skew the gig.
Yeah. Oh my God. It's so on the nose of like what they're doing. It's like, oh my God.
Yeah.
But then I think what makes that kill scene so hilarious is that the one woman, I can't remember her name. She's amazing as an actress.
Lin Shaye? Lin Shaye?
Yeah. Lin Shaye. She, they call him like Ricky on a sticky.
Yeah.
And then she licks the blood. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's what makes it such a great kill.
Well, you know, it's funny because that kill could be offensive
mm-hmm.
in itself, but there's context into why they did it, because the whole time Robert England knows that one of his, I think they're his sons, is going to have to hook up with him. And so, mm-hmm. like, they're even, like, loser has to bottom. And so, like, the other guy lost. And so, like, I think that's why they did it.
Mm-hmm.
But at that point, for me, that's when the movie stopped being funny intentionally. Because mm-hmm. we like these people. And they're figuring out what's happening. And so, it stops being almost lighthearted. Because now you're like, well, I want them to live because I like them.
Mm-hmm.
And for me anyways, and so like when they did that death, it wasn't done like in a comedic like wah, wah, wah. We stuck the thing up the gay guy's butt.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when it started becoming more of like a disturbing horror film, as it should have been. And
yeah.
But I don't know why the one that really stuck with me, which maybe it's because it's actually fucked up, like what, if it happened one? In real life, was the bell. The Chinese girl with the bell.
Oh, yeah, the bell, yeah.
And they take out the Southern bell.
Yeah. And they take out their umbrellas, which I think is the comedic part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, they're waiting for the blood. And what does she say? She says, for a Chinese woman, she had a lot of guts.
Yeah.
Or something.
Oh, and that's also because, again, the tone, it's a minor shift, but there is a small shift into mm-hmm. more being more serious at that point. And,
yeah.
you know, when you look at these characters as the actual character and their storylines, like she was kind of like a hard ass biker chick when she first mm-hmm. got there, and she wasn't nice, but she kind of let that wall down and she started like becoming friendly with everybody, and she wasn't the biker chick anymore, and they put her in that dress and the gown, so she starts like feeling like, oh, like, you know, this is fun, and they're having mm-hmm. her dance around, and then she sees the umbrellas, and we as the audience are like, oh, that's not good, and you can see in her face, and again, this is because we have actual talented people playing these roles, where mm-hmm. her face is like, what's going on, like, Why is it? And then the bell falls on her. I don't know why. I don't have any experience with large bells falling on me, but I can just imagine the sound it makes when it crushes you, because she's inside the bell.
Yeah.
And it's huge, you know, like, you know how they say sometimes if a diver's too close to, I forgot what whale, the vocals can actually like make your brain explode.
Oh no.
Vibrations. And so I was like, oh, I just didn't like it. I mean,
now I don't want to swim with whales anymore.
Well, I mean, you shouldn't to begin with, but it's not a great idea whether they can kill you or not.
I didn't realize that. Yeah. No. Even the song that she sings whenever they're doing the dance, and because they're teaching them how to do a dance, and they kind of dress them up as like Southern Belles, like the villain, she is singing the song. And her song, like if you listen to those lyrics, they are so specific and they're amping up to we're going to kill you. Like if you listen to those lyrics. Now, I think you make a really good point. I think that it does teeter on, is this comedy or is this, you know, very serious? And like, I didn't want to see any of them die. But I will say I did a little bit of research into the ways that they were killing people, because I was like, I listened to a lot of true crime and I listened to a lot of history, like fucked up history. And some of the ways that they were killing people were very reminiscent of like medieval ways that you would kill someone. Those are all like the spear. That is a way that they would kill people.
Horse one I've heard of, and that was, you know, it's a low budget movie, so it's not perfect with the way they execute it, but it's enough to be like, that's a lot. The horse quad section, basically. I don't know what it's called, but
yeah.
Again, I love animals and I've ridden horses and I know how strong they are, and just making your brain put it together to be like, oh, that sucks.
So the only reason why that kill isn't one of my on my top out of the, what, I think there's 7 or 8 kills overall.
Spoiler alert, they all die, everybody. So
yeah, everyone dies. But whenever the horses start pulling and her limbs start coming off, like that final limb, like what is she holding on to that final limb is coming off and she's now just a torso?
I thought the same thing too.
It's very weak.
It was a mistake.
Yeah.
But like the first two limbs to come off was effective, but like you can tell at the end she's laying on something to keep her stationary. She wouldn't be stationary if that was happening.
No. So. It was very funny. It was just like, it was so over the top. The kill where the woman seduces like one of the, not the dorkiest boy, but the other one with like the guitar. I think he had a guitar.
He was the one, he was like the brunette one, because there was blonde tips, Justin Timberlake blonde tips, and there was the blonde nerdy guy, and then the regular brunette guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, with the acid.
So she just like, who the fuck lets someone just like put a tube down their throat? They're about to get all hot and happy, and she's like, here you go, here's.
I mean, it did kind of look like a beer like thing. You know how they do like the beer gravity, I don't know what it's called.
Like a gravity bong.
But I do want to say, because that guy, I thought he was the main character. This movie also does where like you think they don't follow a specific person, because at first they follow him, I forgot his name, and then he's with his friends, and you kind of just kind of see all of them together. And the first girl we meet is the girl that got the first girl to die, or the first person to die, is the girl that we first meet in the car. And they even do like the sexy slow-mo thing of her, and she's very pretty. And I thought maybe she was gonna, like, that was gonna be the final two, but it's like, nope, she dies first, and then he dies somewhere in the middle.
The acid scene in particular, I thought it was really funny how the heart was still going. Like,
oh, that was, it was so good, though.
It was good.
There's this. There's a small moment in time in that scene where they do some trauma effects of CGI with the hole, but everything else around that, the practical effects around that, is so good. Like when it's still beating, but it like starts melting down. That, I love that.
It was good. It was good.
We're so, we're such creeps. They're gonna put us on the no-fly list. I love that.
You know, practical effects. It's magic. It's not real.
It's
I wouldn't like it if it was real.
Yeah.
That song that they kept singing, The South Will Rise. Did you realize that's a real song?
It doesn't surprise me.
Because I was like trying to find background music. And I always try to find for when I do the editing part.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, let me find this song. And I'm going to try to get like a snippet of just the instrumentals. It's a real song. And they even have like a karaoke version.
Oh my God.
On that's how I got the instrumental piece. But you
have the karaoke version. We've touched on this before. The Southern education system doesn't tell you exactly all the truth. And this kind of proves the point that in high school, I was not told that this flag was controversial, that it was negative. We didn't have it flying in the school, but we definitely didn't talk about our faults as a section of the country. And I think this comes with misinformation. You just have people, you know, look at sports teams. That no one's getting hurt when you say, I love, you know, you're in Florida, Miami Dolphins. I know that's not where you live, though. But you're like, I love Miami Dolphins. Have I been to the game? Not really, but I'm going to support them because, you know, that's where I live. But that's fine because it's not hurting anybody. And people have that mentality when it comes to the South. I'm Southern. I'm in the South. I'm going to support the Confederacy. But they don't know actually what it was for. And so, and I think this is a symptom of that. Like, we probably shouldn't have, if this song was made, like, back in the day when the war was happening, I still wouldn't listen to it, but it makes sense. But the fact that we have a karaoke version.
No, I was very shocked. I was like, what the actual fuck? And the original version is more, way more like a Yankee Doodle went to town like type thing. And I remember being a kid and singing that in school, but we did not sing The South Will Rise Again in school, thankfully, because that would be traumatizing. But they definitely give it like a really almost like a Rob Zombie type spin in the movie. So, I mean, we pretty much spoke on the terrorizing the people and, you know, all the racist aspects. They call the Chinese, the woman who is, I don't even think she's Chinese, but
yeah, she looks maybe half.
And they call her like the China woman.
China woman. Oh my God. But you know what's funny is that there are so many blatant racist, homophobic, and like to the black guy, to the bi guy, to the Chinese woman, and they go with it. And I feel like that was of the time where you're like, I'm going to remember that you're a fucking asshole, but I'm not going to call the scene right now. And, you know, it's it was refreshing, you know, when you have, because the black guy and the Chinese lady are a couple. Lady, it makes her sound old. She's like 20 something, but they're a couple, and so they meet, they're in the hotel or wherever they're staying at in this house, and without lack of better term, the bellboy is very racist to the black guy and like is making very racist comments, and the black guy's like, oh, you want me to do this, you want me to do that, and he starts like making very antiquated, very racist, what they used to expect from black people back in the day. And I liked that approach because it's, if he was just going to get mad and like threaten to beat his ass and like, you know, punch him, we see that in everything. And it's kind of like he was, you know, he was almost like taking a different approach to being like so overtly like, oh, this is what you want. Oh, this is what you want. Oh, this is what you want. And it was making fun of him without the guy actually knowing that he's making fun of him. And I was like, it's cool to see another take on how someone responds to it. Not saying any which way is right or wrong to respond to it. I think all races should be punished, but You know, yeah. It took a different path.
He's kind of mocking them because they are extremely racist and they are treating them like outsiders. And they, you know, they are making these remarks that are extremely inappropriate. And so he makes those comments. And then the mayor says something like, he's like, you should be mindful of the people here. They lost a lot for, you know, what they're doing. But it becomes very threatening. And mm-hmm. every time that they try to leave, it becomes very threatening. And they know that, you know, they kind of get the message that they can't just freely leave of their own, you know, will, of their own free will. They're not sure. They know that there is something very menacing happening and malicious, but they're not sure what it is just yet. Yeah. They find out soon, but
yeah, but it does do a good job of like, I don't want them to die. Like, I know we're being silly, ha ha ha, but like now shit's getting real. Mm-hmm. And there's still a little bit of campiness and a little bit of light comedy here and there, but
yeah,
they know when to tone it down and turn up the horror. And that's what I really like.
It does have a good balance between that. And it has a good balance between like, oh, we're going to play along and then we're going to push back. Mm-hmm. And I think the character, the black man, he does a really good job with that. And just like kind of calling things out. He's the only one that's really calling things out as they are. And it's because he's the one who, you know, is going to experience it the most. And he's had the most experience with that in his life, right? Like he knows what racism looks like. He knows what all this shit is. Like they're all pretty much white, except for him and his girlfriend.
The Chinese girl. Yeah, but even she, they weren't as mean to her about her nationality, but because I don't remember what they were referencing when they talked about Chinese people. I can only think of like the railroads. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that, I don't know, I don't want to speak out of turn, but I know they referenced something about Chinese people from the past, but it wasn't, you know, as big of a scale as how they felt about Black people.
Yeah. No, there's definitely, I mean, any culture that came in, and I mean, their target was Northerners, no matter what. Like if you were a Northerner, they wanted to have their revenge. It's very comical the way that they do everything, but there is that serious undertone, and there, you know, there is a real history there that can't be ignored. And this movie, I think, does a really good job commenting on it. And I don't see the like the director as actually being a racist, or the like the screenwriters as actually writing it to be a racist film. I see it as them showcasing what the Confederacy was, showcasing what the racism was. This is what it looked like. This is the kind of shit that was happening. You're not supposed to be sympathetic towards the Confederate like town. You're not supposed to give a shit what happens to them.
Yeah. And I, you know, the movie, I felt, given its topic and its what it's referencing, it was made very well, and there was very good decisions made by whoever the writers, directors, that it wasn't made in a racist tone because there's no stereotypes. You know, the bi guy, you know, he's just, whenever he wants to have sex, yeah, he gets a little flirty and, you know, makes some gay jokes, but like, he has eyeliner on. Oh, no. But this is also the early 2000s. That could have just been a Sugar Ray statement. And, you know, and like the Chinese girl, the black guy, they were bikers, but they weren't stereotypes of anything, except maybe in the beginning they had like a biker stereotype with like the bad attitude and the leather and stuff. But
yeah,
there was nothing that was like, oh, we're writing this character as a Chinese woman, we should have her do this or say this. And it's like, you know, so
There is a little bit of a spring break stereotype with it, with the especially with the college students, like that the group of the three boys. They're very much like, we're going to go have a good time. We're going to go try to get laid and do all this stuff. And their plans get, you know, upended by this little podunk town. But even that is like such a broad stereotype. It's not, you know, it's not.
It's like a stereotypical situation, not like a person.
Yeah.
Because it was very, and you know, not to bring back Cabin Fever again, but it's very Cabin Fever where they're like, spring break, we're going to go do this, we're going to go have sex, we're going to drink, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
We're gonna, you know. And so it is very much a spring break, spring breakers type horror film.
Okay. So I kind of play a game with my guests. I'm really curious whenever it comes to the ways that the people were killed. And so I came up with a little game for you. I have a little medieval death, would you rather edition.
Oh, this is going to be bad. I'm an overthinker.
Don't overthink it. Just go this with your first.
This episode is going to be in two parts, everybody. I'm just
Okay, so medieval death. So this is basically, I picked the ways that they were being killed on screen. And then I found another way that they could have been killed within medieval times. And you have to choose, you know, choose your demise.
This is going to turn into a scary movie where you're going to find me dead tomorrow with the same scenario.
I really hope not. I would feel so responsible. All right. So would you rather be pulled apart, which is another way of, like, they called it the rack, to be pulled apart like that, or crushed by an elephant?
Okay. So here's the situation. Do I want to get pulled into four different parts? Non-vital parts, by the way. So you're going to be alive for a while by four horses. Or based off this picture, do I want a large elephant to crush my head? I'm going to go with the elephant because that seems like it would be over much faster. But here I go overthinking. I don't think the elephant, this probably happened, which is probably fucked up. Like, you know, back then, elephants weren't listening to nobody. And so, like, I can imagine, like, I've seen elephants play with balls and, like, sometimes they accidentally, like, roll their ankle and it's like, oops, I didn't crush it all the way. And so you're sitting there, like, twitching like a fish. But we'll go with the elephant crushing.
I think these were like trained execution elephants. Like they were trained to squash heads.
That's crazy.
Okay, and that's real.
Give me the most tenured crushing elephant and have him do it.
I know, right? Like just get it over with. I agree. I would also go with the elephant crushing.
It's also a cooler animal. Fuck horses.
Yeah, and that's kind of why I put them together, because it's like, what animal would you rather be killed by, horses or an elephant? Like,
yeah,
I choose elephant. Come on, Dumbo. So pressed to death. So they used to, I don't really know what contraption they're using in the movie. It's like a metal press, but being pressed to death was a real thing. They would just like put rocks on top of people. They'd put like a like a flat rock and then pile rocks on top of it and until you were crushed and die. So would you rather that or the wheel? Do you know how the wheel works?
I'm afraid to ask. No, I don't.
So the wheel, basically you're gonna go around and around the wheel and it's going to pull you apart slowly. That like you're not just freely in the air with the wheel. There's like there's stuff below you as you're gonna pass and it's going to tear at you, and they keep doing this, and I'm pretty sure they like they're hurting you at the same time, and you don't come off the wheel surviving. You die on the wheel. So crushed or the wheel?
I mean, neither are great. Both of them are going to take some time. I'm going to have to go with being crushed, even though my claustrophobia is going to kick in. But I don't want to be shredded apart over, like, hours.
Yeah. No, it took a long time. The wheel took a long time. I would also choose being pressed to death. One thing that this reminds me of, actually, whenever he was pressed to death, his eyeballs, mm-hmm. how they, like, bulged.
Yeah.
It was pretty good.
More right. kudos to the special effects.
Yes.
Oh, God.
So the impalement was actually real. Like, people would get impaled with a thing like that. And it could be from ass to mouth, or it could be ass to torso. However, it ended up coming out, and they would just display people on those spikes. That was real.
I wonder how many times they'd miss, they would, like, come out of their neck or something.
Yeah, I think that's why it was like, it didn't have to, you have to be skilled to get it straight through. Or, okay, so that were boiled to death. They would actually boil people to death. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah, they cook you.
I'm going to have nightmares tonight. This just comes down to timing. Get mm-hmm. it over with and impale me. Yeah. Boiled to death. I can't. You're not supposed to say these things out loud because, you know, you watch all the scary movies and they say, don't admit your fears. Burning sucks.
Yeah.
Like, burning is bad.
I mean, I kind of thought, like, I might be able to survive the boiled to death because it could just be, like, a really nice hot bath.
Well, I mean, as a gay man, I could probably survive the impalement. I just have to fake it until everybody leaves.
Well, I'll take that. So it's you impalement, me boiled to death.
Because of our hidden talents for these situations.
Yes. All right. So next one. Oh, my God. Her iron teeth, which reminded me of the pair of anguish. So this little thing over here on the side of her. Like, the iron teeth are not real, but the pair of anguish is basically a corkscrew that they put into a person, and they could put it into any of your holes. And as long as there was an opening, and it kind of reminds me of, like, the clamp from the OBGYN. But
the forceps.
So lucky. Yeah. You're so lucky you don't have to deal with that. But yeah, basically it would, like, screw, and they would, like, they would kill you. It was a very slow death because it would take very vital things out of you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, her mouth kind of reminded me of that. So there's that. And, or the rat torture, which rat torture, if we talk about, like, ways that people used to be killed and tortured, that one freaks me out.
Yeah. I'm going to go with iron teeth or the pair of anguish because rat torture is like a double whammy. You're getting bitten until you're shredded, and then you can feel them running around inside of you. I think that's worse than getting shredded, is feeling rats running inside.
Yeah, no, it's a really terrifying way, especially because that, like, rat torture has been used in so many different TV shows and movies and stuff like that. So it's an image that we're definitely very familiar with. And it's just terrifying. Like, the rat is terrified. You are terrified. It's only going through you to try to get out.
Yeah. I'm also sympathetic to the rat. I'm like, we don't need to involve another living thing in my death.
Yeah, I feel bad for the rat.
Because I'm assuming, like, they kill it afterwards.
Or they just train it to eat flesh. And then it starts wanting human flesh.
Then they let it loose. And then the bubonic plague happens.
Yeah. All right. So that's it. Those are the ones. That was the game.
Well, that was lovely.
I hope you had fun.
Oh, yes. I definitely have some images in my head now that I'll be thinking about when I'm going to bed tonight.
You'll have sweet dreams.
Mm-hmm. Or I'm going to be like, actually, let me text her. I'm going to change my answer. No, I think I'm pretty comfortable with all of my answers. It's nice meeting you. I'll see you later.
Yes, you too. Bye. Bye. For the true horrors, I'm going to get into the Civil War. The American Civil War that took place from 1860 to 1861. So let's talk about this highly debated war and whether or not it was fought for state rights or about slavery. I'm going to kind of cover how state rights and slavery were extremely intertwined. You cannot separate them from each other. The state rights was the state rights that they were trying to protect was their rights to slavery. And it had to do with farming and it had to do with industry. But that industry was built on the backs of black slaves. We cannot ignore that. Okay? So we're going to talk about it. The American Civil War was fought between the United States of America and the Confederate States of America. So we had the Union versus the Confederacy. A collection of 11 Southern states that left the Union in 1860 and 1861. The conflict began primarily as a result of the long-standing disagreement over the institution of slavery. On February 9th, in 1861, Jefferson Davis, a former U.S. Senator and Secretary of War, was elected President of the Confederate States of America by the members of the Confederate Constitutional Convention. After 4 bloody years of conflict, the United States defeated the Confederate States. In the end, the states that were in rebellion were readmitted to the United States, and the institution of slavery was abolished nationwide. So the only thing that got abolished between the states, the only right that they lost was their right to slaves. So don't tell me it wasn't about slavery. Don't come for me either. Do your own fucking research if you don't agree with me, because I'm not wrong. So Abraham Lincoln grew up in a log cabin in Kentucky. He worked as a shopkeeper and a lawyer before entering politics in 1840. Alarmed by his anti-slavery stance, Southern states seceded soon after he was elected president in 1860. With 4 more states to soon follow, Lincoln declared that he would do everything necessary to keep the United States as one country. He refused to recognize the Southern states as independent, and the Civil War erupted in the spring of 1861. On January 1st, 1863, Lincoln issued the Emancipation Proclamation, which freed the slaves in the areas of the country that shall then be in rebellion against the United States. The Emancipation Proclamation laid the groundwork for the eventual freedom of slaves across the country. Lincoln won re-election in 1864 against opponents who wanted to sign a peace treaty with the Southern states. Slavery was concentrated mainly in the Southern states by the mid-19th century, where slaves were used as farm laborers, artisans, and house servants. This formed the backbone of the largely agrarian Southern economy. In the northern states, industry largely drove the economy. Many people in the North and South believed that slavery was immoral and wrong. Yet the institution remained. Southerners felt threatened by the pressure of northern politicians and abolitionists, who included the zealot John Brown, and claimed that the federal government had no power to end slavery, impose certain taxes, force infrastructure improvements, or influence Western expansion against the wishes of the state government. While some Northerners felt that Southern politicians wielded too much power in the House and Senate and that they would never be appeased, from the earliest days of the United States through the antebellum years, politicians on both sides of the major issues attempted to find a compromise that would avoid the splitting of the country and ultimately avert a war. The Missouri Compromise, the Compromise of 1850, the Kansas-Nebraska Act, and many others all failed to steer the country away from secession and war. In the end, politicians on both sides of the aisle dug in their heels. 11 states left the United States in the following order and formed the Confederate States of America: South Carolina, Mississippi, Florida, Alabama, Georgia, Louisiana, Texas, Virginia, Arkansas, North Carolina, and Tennessee. At the beginning of the Civil War, 22 million people lived in the North and 9 million people, nearly 4 million of who were slaves, lived in the South. The North also had more money, more factories, more horses, more railroads, and more farmland. On paper, these advantages made the United States much more powerful than the Confederate States. However, the Confederates were fighting defensively on territory that they knew well. They also had the advantage of the sheer size of the Southern Confederacy, which meant that the Northern armies would have to capture and hold vast quantities of land across the South. The Civil War devastated the Confederate States. The presence of vast armies throughout the countryside meant that livestock, crops, and other staples were consumed very quickly. In November of 1863, President Lincoln traveled to the small Pennsylvania town and delivered the Gettysburg Address, which expressed firm commitment to preserving the Union and became one of the most iconic speeches in American history. After 4 years of conflict, the major Confederate armies surrendered to the United States in April of 1865. The war bankrupted much of the South, left its roads, farms, and factories in ruins, and all but wiped out an entire generation of men who wore the blue and the gray. More than 120,000 men died in the Civil War, more than any other war in American history. The Southern states were occupied by Union soldiers, rebuilt, and gradually readmitted to the United States over the course of 20 difficult years known as the Reconstruction Era. During the war, Abraham Lincoln freed some slaves and allowed free men to join the Union Army as the United States colored troops. It was clear to many that it was only a matter of time before slavery would be fully abolished. As the war drew to a close, but before the Southern states were readmitted to the United States, the Northern states added the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments to the Constitution. The amendments are also known as the Civil War Amendments. The 13th Amendment abolished slavery in the United States. The 14th Amendment guaranteed that citizens would receive equal protection under the law. And the 15th Amendment granted black men the right to vote. The 14th Amendment has played an ongoing role in American society as different groups of citizens continue to lobby for equal treatment by the government. So that is the shorthand of the Civil War. Those are your basic facts to understand what, when, where, and how. If you are still confused on whether the Civil War was about slavery, do some research on your own. If you are flying a Confederate flag, you are a racist. If you are flying a Confederate flag, you probably also have a Trump flag. I'm just gonna go out on a whim and say that. If you have a problem with anything I said, don't listen to my podcast. You choose what you listen to. You don't have to listen to me if you don't want to. If you don't want to hear my logic and my research, then fuck off, please, and thank you. One thing I don't give a shit about is people's opinion that I also don't approve of. You know who
I give a shit about. I give a shit about those, the people that were subjected to slavery. I give a shit about the people that horror is about. Horror has always been about the underrepresented class. It has always been about the misfits. Horror is political. Horror is here to highlight the atrocities that happen to people. And if you have a problem with that, fuck off. Thanks.
Let's end on a high note.
This ain't my first barbecue, son! And it surely won't be my last!
If you would like to collaborate on something, I would love the opportunity to connect with more people in the horror scene. I'm currently scheduling guests to be on episodes for April, and you don't have to be an expert to talk horror with me. I've decided against the reviews to be entered in a monthly giveaway. This is mainly because it didn't do well, and I'm not afraid to admit that. I'm not afraid to admit that I don't have the pool yet to make that a thing. And honestly, like, if you like what I do, just please leave a review. It really helps a girl out. And it's a small token that you can leave me for all the work that I'm putting into this. The winner for February was CryptoMovie77. If you're listening, I sent you an email. Once I receive your details, I will mail you your prizes. If you haven't already, please rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Do it because it really helps the Scream Queen get recognition for all the work I put into this podcast and the content I create. As for shout-outs, I will still be shouting out people for leaving reviews and comments that stand out to me on social media. On Apple Podcast, Smack It Raw said, "I really enjoy the true crime of it all portion of the show and how she ties the actual crimes to what we see on film. Thank you." That's just how my brain works. And when I watch horror movies, that's what I'm thinking about. So I didn't see a lot of people connecting these things, and it's something that I think it just makes sense. I think horror is an important genre. We're finally starting to get some recognition for horror movies, and you know, part of the reason is because horror movies are social commentary. They are important and they are embedded in historical events. Most of them, not all of them. And it is the genre for the unheard. When I say Scream Queen, I don't mean that in a bad way. The scream is empowerment. If someone's fucking with you, you better scream as loud as you can. I'm going to tell you that right now. Don't go quietly. Scream your head off. I recently posted a found footage video, no pun intended, of my young and impressionable feet reenacting scenes of Quentin Tarantino films. This is something I did for my bestest friend 12 years ago when she was in a film study class, and it shows my long-lasting love for Quentin's work in the movie Death Proof. I got a decent amount of comments from people letting me know how pretty my feet are to the comedy of it all, because I really found the whole thing hilarious. I did not take my feet seriously. I guess my toe beans are all right, but my cat's toe beans are way better. They have the cutest little toe beans. Evan Towell replied, "LOL, maybe Quentin will see this, and it'll be an audition, and he'll use your feet in his next movie." Quentin, if you're listening to this, my feet are available. They're not as nice as they used to be. They're a little bit more wrinkly. Like, definitely, I need to moisturize them. And I got something going on with my toenail that I'm trying to get rid of. I'm going to take some medicine for that. I just had blood work done, so I'm going to get rid of that thing going on in my toenail. But, you know, besides that, my feet are pretty much the same shape. So they're not bad. They're not bad feet. This month, I'm covering spring break horror movies. If you have a movie suggestion that could fit into the category, email me at screamqueenpodcaster@gmail.com, and I will share your suggestions. My next horror event is Tuesday, March 11th, and it will be based on the Scream franchise. I'm very excited for this one, and from now on, my events will be based on movie franchises. This is a weekly podcast with a new episode out every Thursday. All the research, writing, and audio is done by yours truly. This is a one-woman show, and I am doing my very best. You can find me on Instagram at Scream Queen Podcaster, Blue Sky at Scream Queen Podcast, TikTok at Scream Queen Podcast, and there is a link tree that will take you to all my other social media platforms. Don't be a sore loser. Until next time, goodbye.